This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has actually happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight, Katie from the Fifth Tradition Group is going to make her debut here at NAVA. About 6 months ago, I ran into Heather and Katie at Serenity House in Beaufort on a Sunday. There was some good sharing at that meeting that day. I asked Heather who she might recommend, and she recommended Katie right off the bat. Katie said she'd call, and she did. It took about a month. But she signed up, and tonight's the night. It's been a while. I can't wait. Thank you, Katie.
For one night of my life, I get to be 5'5". I'm so excited. I'm Katie Ogles. I'm an alcoholic. And thank you, Tim, for asking me to speak. I do still suffer from a terrible case of procrastination, which is a fancy word for saying I'm lazy and inconsiderate, but I like procrastination better. My sobriety date is April 23rd, 2009. I have a home group. It is the Fifth Tradition Group. And, I mean, I just get blown away whenever I speak. I mean, there's like 15, 20 people here from my home group. Like, that is such a good feeling to be that supported. And loved, you know. I still get delusional and think, oh, God, nobody likes me, and, you know, there's so many people here. I do have a sponsor. She has a sponsor, and I also sponsor women. And when Kat said at the beginning, you know, this is a speaker meeting where, you know, someone with a year or more sobriety tells his or her story, I am a her. I know it may not look like that to some people out there. I hope this cardigan doesn't make me look too gay, but... So my sponsor told me that my job when I speak is to talk about what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now, and to hopefully reach the me in the room when I first came in, and I'm going to do my best to do that. I'm 33 years old. I was born May 10th, 1981. You know, alcoholism runs in my family. It's, you know, it's undeniable. In my immediate family of my mother, father, myself, and my sister, 3 out of 4 of us are alcoholics, so, whew, you know, growing up, I used my childhood as a great excuse to drink. You know, the things happened that probably shouldn't have, absolutely. But I know today that made me no more of an alcoholic. I mean, it's just, I know the way that I operate, that my parents could have stayed married and loved me to death. And I would have been like, God, they smothered me. You know what I mean? Like... because I have this thing inside of me that no matter what you give me, it's just never enough. And I hope to touch on that a little more as I talk. But, you know, it was a little crazy childhood. You know, like I said, my mom is an alcoholic. In fact, my mom, my sister, and I, all three went to the same treatment center. You know, like some people have colleges as alma maters. We do the treatment center in my family, and I'm the only one that went twice, so I'm a double major. You know, of course, I'm better than. You know, it was the best way I can describe my childhood was just kind of chaotic. You know, you never knew what was going to happen, and I learned at a young age that, you know, when you found soda laying around the house, you have to sniff it before you drink it because it may be Jack and Pepsi, and that's just gross when you're 5. But, you know, I don't think anyone makes it through childhood unscathed. And, you know, looking back, like, it wasn't all tears and abuse. I mean, there was some good, and I tend to forget that a lot. you know, I was a tomboy kid. I was the girl that would take her shirt off and run out and play with the guys. And, you know, my mom's like, oh, my God, no, you have to put clothes on. And didn't quite understand that double standard. You know, but I, even as a young kid, and I hear people share about this all the time, it's like that feeling of I don't fit in or I'm not good enough. I have an older sister, and, I mean, she's super girly and in my opinion, just absolutely beautiful. And that was not me. You know, I was this buck tooth with a big gap that you could put a quarter in and probably get a Coke out my butt. I mean, it was just, you know, like I was just, I had a mullet. And I would tell my mom, we have pictures of this mullet. And I'm like, Mom, are you kidding me with this? And she was like, Katie, you asked for it. You know what I mean? So, and that's typical. Like, you know, I want something. And then when it doesn't go my way, I blame you. And, you know, there's a story that my dad tells, and it's pretty interesting. When I was about 2 or 3, he I don't know if y'all remember Hello Kitty, but he gave me a quarter and or whatever, 50 cents, I don't know. I guess it was a lot of money back then. And he sent me into the store to buy something. And he watched me, and I walked in with the quarter in one hand, picked up candy or whatever, and walked out of the store. And, like, that is the theme that would go on for the rest of my life. Like, you give me something, and I want to keep that, and I just want to take more. You know, I don't ever want to give, and because I'm extremely selfish and self-centered, even at 5.5 years sober. I mean, that's still very, very much apparent in my life. But, you know, I like to play sports as a kid. That was something, that was the first thing that really got me out of me, you know, like the star. I was probably not as good as I thought I was in my mind, you know. But I love being the center of attention, you know, especially playing softball. And in fact, my 9th grade year, and I played basketball, and that's just ironic, but, the way my mind works, and I don't know if any of y'all can relate to this, but I played basketball my freshman year of high school, and, my coach gave me an award, and, he went on to say all these things. And the last thing he said was, and Katie had the most interesting way of fouling people, because I pretty much fouled out of every game. You know, I was very aggressive. And when he said that, like, it completely diminished the award. You know, in my mind, I was like, I'm not good enough. You know, and that's just how I felt, man, growing up. Like, I could blend in, and I could hang out. You know, I played sports, so I hung out with people that played sports, and but I was never, I wasn't the star, so therefore, what's the point? You know, I either want to be president or I want to go home. You know, like, it's not okay to just be a player among players. I wanted to be the best, and if I wasn't, I would just quit. You know, I was in one honors English class, and I always emphasize that because I used to exaggerate, which is a fancy word for lie, and tell people, like, oh, I was in honors classes one time, and I almost made a D, maybe a C. But I, you know, and so I could fit in with the smart kids, but I didn't feel smart enough. You know, it's like, here I am struggling, you know, having to spend hours on this schoolwork, and these people are passing with flying colors. And, you know, I hung out with the cool kids that like to party, but, you know, I just always felt so uncomfortable, like, oh my God, when am I going to say the wrong thing that makes them go, yeah, you don't belong with us. So I never quite got that feeling of, you know, this is where I belong. And let me tell you, Alcoholics Anonymous is a place where I know I absolutely, absolutely belong, especially with my home group, man. These people, I don't know. I mean, they're like my drink today. When I see, we were talking about that, and I want to thank Yona and Kara and Harry. We said the third step prayer outside in the parking lot, and if you would have told me 5.5 years ago that I would look at someone and say, will you pray with me, I would have bought you a drink. You know what I mean? And they're like, yeah, it's on me. Because that would never happen. But so my first drink, you know, drugs are a part of my story. I'm not going to go into that, and I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail because this is AA, and I want to respect that. But, I mean, they are a part of my story. But the first time I can remember really drinking, I think I was about 13 or 14, and there was a movie theater, you know, gas station in Norcross, where I did some of my growing up. I use that term loosely. But, you know, we got a six-pack of something like Busch or Milwaukee's Best, something just, oh, God. And when I can't tell you that I took a drink and I felt the magic go all the way down. That didn't happen for me. But what did happen is that there was this one person that I didn't think liked me enough, you know, like she didn't validate me constantly and tell me how great I am. And, you know, that bothers me when you don't do that. And, you know, I remember when I started to get a buzz, I no longer cared what that girl thought. And that, like, I felt okay. It was just kind of like, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? And that is the feeling that I would go for the next, I don't know, 13 or 14 years. It's just that feeling of, I'm okay, and what you think doesn't matter, and it's all good. And but the second time I can really remember drinking, it was pretty crazy, man. I ended up blacking out, and it was the night before, it was the night before a basketball homecoming, you know, that I had to go to. And the end result of that night was I ended up falling asleep on my back and getting sick. And knowing what I know now, like, I mean, that's dangerous. You know, I could have aspirated and, you know, who knows what could have happened. But I woke up in my own vomit. And I vaguely remember at one point in the night, my friend that I was with, you know, they had cut me off, you know, and that's sad. At 14, you're getting cut off by your friends. And, you know, I remember hearing someone say, "Where is Katie?" And I was, like, kneeling down, not like I really had to, behind the refrigerator door, drinking whatever I could find. And that's kind of how, that's not how my drinking always was. You know what I mean? I wasn't always this, like, out of control, blackout, doing insanely tragic things. And that would keep me in the delusion that, yeah, but I don't always do that, so therefore I'm not an alcoholic. Because I had a lot of ideas of what an alcoholic was. And is there a clock? Because I really don't want to run over. It's behind me? Okay. So, you know, and my sponsor has described it the best. The first time I got inebriated, let's just say that, you know, whether it be alcohol or whatever, the thought of being sober wouldn't do again. In fact, I remember my sister and a friend of mine made a pact, like, every day we have to do blank, you know, whatever it is. Like, we have to get loaded. And what that looked like for me was, you know, things that, you know, as a kid I used to enjoy that would kind of be my escape, if you will, like Nintendo, or, you know, things that kids do, Nintendo and not Walkman, but those portable CD players. I would start pawning that stuff, you know. And I have stepkids today that are around the age that I was when I started, you know, drinking and partying. And I just can't imagine that, you know what I mean? Like, looking at them and just like, God, you know, like the stuff that I was doing at that age is just terrifying, actually. And sad. Like, I would not want that for them at all. Oh, perfect. Thank you. But, you know, so for a long time, I mean, my drinking, it wasn't always, you know, I can't say that it was awful. And I mean, I had some good memories. I had a blast. And, you know, it didn't seem to be an issue. Like, I just, it was what I did. You know, the book talks about our alcoholic life is the only normal one. And that was normal to me. You know what I mean? School just kind of became a second thought. Like, it didn't matter. Sports, quit those. You know, it was just, I was on a mission of, you know, I'm going to live how I want to live. And if you have an issue with it, then see ya, you know. And I mean, that's how I lived for quite a few years. And I guess around the age of 21, 22, I don't want to say that, like, my drinking, I was concerned about it. But I was working in restaurants. And, I mean, that's all we did. We partied, we worked. We partied, we worked. And I was like, okay. And this type of thinking I had when I was drinking, and I still have it today. Like, whatever you hear tonight, I don't ever want to give this idea that, like, oh, I'm 5.5 years sober and I'm perfect now. That is so far from the truth. In fact, I've done some dumb stuff sober, and I can't blame it on alcohol, you know. But I remember having the conscious thought that what I need to do is I need to go to nursing school, you know, because that will get my stuff together. You know what I mean? I need to get a career, and I need to grow up. And so that's what I did. I started going to technical school. And, You know, the mind's an awesome thing. I would justify my drinking because I think I was 23, 24, you know, when most kids are graduating college. And I'm like, well, this is what college kids do. They drink. Okay, yeah, maybe at University of Georgia. But I'm at Lanier Technical College in Oakwood, Georgia. It's not like a party school. You know what I mean? They don't even have dorms. And, I mean, even throughout... you know, nursing school, I did well. You know, nursing is something that, you know, it's a career that I chose, but that I'm absolutely passionate about. And, you know, I do. I love it. And for whatever reason, I did well. I did very well in nursing school. But, you know, my professors would pull me aside and just say, like, what's going on with you? Because I would come to school. Like, it does not matter. When I'm drinking, responsibilities, they don't matter. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to drink, and I'm either going to not go to school or I'm going to go extremely hungover. At one point, I took a test and just, like, turned it in and literally passed out. And my teacher had to wake me up and say, hey, you passed, and you can go home. You know, and they would talk to me about my drinking, but I'm very manipulative. And what I mean by that is that I put on my charm and my best behavior, and I get you to love me. That way, when I start to screw up, because I'm absolutely going to, you don't want to punish me. You know, it's personal now. And I did that with jobs. I did that with relationships. I did that with school. I did in every area of my life. I'm extremely manipulative. And speaking of work, I mean, my God, I was a disaster as an employee. I didn't know how to ever show up on time. I didn't think it was that big of a deal. In fact, when I worked at the hospital, I remember we worked 12-hour shifts, which really end up as 13. And I went to work one morning late, as usual, and the nurse was like, hey, you know what, Katie? Like, when you're late, like, that kind of affects me and other people, like, you know, why don't you get here on time? And I was so angry. I was like, how dare you? Like, God, loosen up, man. Like, it's just 15 or 20 minutes. Okay, now working, if you're 15 or 20 minutes late when I'm supposed to go home, I'm going to be a little upset too, you know? But I have no idea, no consideration, you know what I mean? No empathy for other people when either if I'm drunk or dry, if I don't do this program. You know, relationships. I have this idea that, you know, if I get in a relationship with the right person, that will fix me. You know, if you just love me enough. There's a common saying in AA that, you know, if this offends anyone, I apologize, that I have to just disagree with, and it's, let us love you until you can love yourself. For me, the experience has been quite the opposite, is through sponsoring other women and loving them and loving other people that I've been able to love myself. Because I absolutely, you can ask my fiance, I will put expectations on you to make me feel okay and enough and get my sense of worth, and you will fail me every time. When all along, that was never your job. And I've done it, again, drunk and sober. So at any rate, I'm working at the hospital, graduating nursing school, and for a little while, you know, I have this idea that relationship, that job, that degree, that this, that whatever is going to fix me. And what ends up happening for me is I believe that it has fixed me, because for a little while, I'll get it together. You know what I mean? So I'm 25 years old. I'm working. You know, on the outside, my life looks better than it ever has been. You know, I have a career. I'm living in Atlanta. I'm in a relationship. I have a car and, you know, like this stuff out here, you know. So, therefore, I should be okay. But my drinking is picking up, to the point where I'm starting to get in trouble at work. You know, I have a boss that's like, Katie, I mean, you're late again. At this particular job, you were allowed 6 call-outs. And, oh, God, I would blow through those, you know, calling out fake sick. In fact, I would call at, like, 3 a.m. and talk to whoever was in charge that night and say, is there any way you can call me off? I mean, I'm still drunk. You know, and the fact that I can't imagine, fathom doing that today. You know, but back then, like, it didn't matter. Like, I can't see that is crazy. And you know, I just wouldn't go. So, I mean, you know, my life is unmanageable, and what I mean by that is I can't do what I say I'm going to do. you know, and I have these groups of friends, you know, that can never really meet each other. You know, I have this one group that knows everything I do, right? And then I have this other group that thinks I don't do anything. You know, they think that I'm just this, you know, sweet, kind nurse, you know. And then I have this other group that has kind of an idea of what I do. They know I like to drink. And they know I like to drink, you know, a good bit, but they don't know about all this other stuff over here. You know what I mean? And it's like, oh, God, you can't all be in the same room today. And, you know, I mean, today I can say that, you know, I can have people that are in my life in the same room and not have to be scared about, oh, God, what does that person know that that person doesn't know? And, you know, like, I don't have that anxiety or that fear. I think I'm pretty transparent today. So, at any rate, you know, I'm working at this hospital job, and, you know, once again, it hasn't fixed me like I thought it would, and that's always disappointing, and it's always its fault, you know what I mean? And I ended up doing some things at that job that just, let's just say that I crossed a line in the sand that I absolutely thought I never would. You know, I found myself in a really, really bad situation. And so I took some time off to think and drink and think and drink and think and drink. And, you know, at this point, my drinking, it's not, you know, it's not going out and having fun. It's I'll paint a little picture for you. It's all right, you know, I really got to stop this drinking. So I'm going to drink wine, right? $2.50 Trader Joe bottle wine because I don't like wine. You know, that's what I drink when I'm quitting drinking. And, you know, I would be at home and I would have a glass because I don't have wine glasses, you know, and I would fill it up and drink it halfway down and fill it back up. Now I'm drinking alone, so I don't have to really, like, who am I hiding it from? You know, like, it's just me. And I'm watching Kenny Chesney's video, That's Why I'm Here, and crying, because it's like, it's about AA. I don't care what he says, it's about AA. You know, and just crying like a loser in my apartment, just like, oh, that's so great and good for you, and I'm gonna drink some more, like, you know. So it's not a party anymore, you know. And I'm waking up every day going, you know, I'm waking up late and I'm saying, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And I'm praying, but it's that foxhole prayer that, God, if you don't let me get caught, then I promise I will never do this again. And every day I'm making the decision that I'm not going to drink. And every night I'm getting off work. Once I get to work and I make sure that everything's okay and I'm not in trouble and I haven't gotten caught and, you know, it seems to be okay, I get off work and I'm back to doing exactly what I did the night before. And I don't understand what's wrong with me. I have no idea. And I'm not an alcoholic because an alcoholic is my mom. And my mom's a very mean drunk. And I'm not all the time. An alcoholic is my sister who calls people at midnight either crying or cussing. And I don't do that. At least I don't remember doing it. You know, like, I have all these ideas of what an alcoholic is. My mind always makes sure that I have a defense, that I'm not an alcoholic because I have a career, because I have stuff, and I have this, and I have that, and never mind the fact that when I'm sober, I'm absolutely miserable, and I can't stand being in my head for 5 minutes. In fact, I remember telling, when I took this little leave from work, I told a friend of mine, I was like, you know, I drink because I just want to stop this for 5 minutes. For 5 minutes, I don't want to hear, you're such a piece of crap. If people really knew you, they wouldn't like you. You're not good enough. You're not good enough. You're not good enough. Because that's what my head does when I'm sober and I'm not treated. And that's what this program treats for me, is just that head chatter. So I'm taking this leave of work, and, you know, God's interesting. God works in my life, you know, whether I want him to or not. And hopefully, you know, I can be present enough to see it happening, you know, and see God in my life. And sometimes I am, and a lot of times I'm just not. But, you know, my phone rang, and it was a woman that I worked with, and she asked me, she's like, how you doing? I'm like, I'm good. Okay, so I'm on a leave from work because I can't stop drinking and doing God knows what else. And I'm good. You know, I'm always good. And she's like, really? I'm like, yeah. She's like, I noticed that you're not at work. You've taken a leave. And I'm like, yeah. you know, I just need to think about some stuff because now I'm looking at moving. You know, I'm dating this person and I need to move closer to her and go to treatment down there. I mean, that's hot. We've been dating for like 6 weeks and I'm like, oh, I need to come to treatment. You know, like, whoo, I was such a catch. And, you know, I don't know what, Grace, I don't know, whatever you call it, but for 1 second I was able to be transparent and I was like, I'm not okay. And I spilled to her everything that had been going on, and she had the exact same experience, exact same. And she referred me to the treatment center that I ended up going to. And, you know, I absolutely thought I wanted to be sober. I started going to AA, and the people there did, I believe, you know, they did what I was taught to do, which was walk up to the newcomer, introduce yourself, you know, give that person your number, and they put a big book in my hand. But, man, I just wasn't willing. I wasn't ready. I thought I was, but my actions told a completely different story. And I went to treatment, and it just didn't stick. You know what I mean? There were things that I was not willing to do, such as call other people. You know, I did not want to do that. I don't know how to talk to you sober. I don't know how to connect with you sober. I just don't know how to do it. And I wasn't willing to do it. You know, I started making amends when I really wasn't clear on step one. I remember calling this lady. The lady that helped me get into treatment, I asked to be my sponsor because she was a nurse. She'd been, you know, through the exact same experience. And, you know, I called her. I was like, yeah, I'm going to go make amends to my boss. She's like, yeah, don't do that. I'm like, oh, no, I need to. I need to be free of this. And she was like, I'm telling you, do not do this. Well, thanks for your suggestion. You know what I mean? Like, I thought it was a, you know, I don't know what I thought sponsorship was. It was like a, not a, hey, this is what I'm thinking about doing. What do you think? But more of a, this is what I'm doing. So, I don't know. I'm not going to listen to what you tell me to do. I didn't stay sober. And I can't, nothing happened today. I remember the day that I picked back up. It was a Tuesday. And nothing happened in my life that day. Out of the ordinary, nothing bad, nothing great. It was just a day, a Tuesday. And I stayed out for 6 weeks. I hear in meetings people say AA will mess up your drinking, and that was, that was true for me. But I gave it a good effort. I remember when I came back to pick up a white chip, I remember sitting outside, and I thought to myself, you know, I'm going to get the relief I'm looking for when I take my last breath. Because at that point, I couldn't put enough anything in my body to stop the head chatter for 5 minutes. It wasn't working. So I did. I went back to AA, and I had to go to treatment because of my nursing license. A little bit changed. I was a little bit more willing in treatment to do some things that I wasn't willing to do the first go around, like go to a sober living. I was just like, oh, fine, whatever. So I picked up my, God willing, last white chip, April 23rd, 2009, and, got a sponsor. I don't have time to talk about all the sponsors I've had, so I'll just fast forward up to the one that I have currently. But even sober or dry, if you will, I still did things that I did drinking. I still had this idea that because at 4 months sober, I'm like, this isn't working fast enough. I had a sponsor. I was going to meetings. I was going to a meeting every single day, sometimes a couple times a day. I was doing service work. I was praying. You know, I'm calling other alcoholics. Like, why do I still feel like crap? So I did what I thought I needed to do, and I got into a relationship. I went back to school and I got a job because I don't realize that I'm suffering from a spiritual malady. You know what I mean? I think that I just don't have enough money or that I'm lonely or that I'm undereducated, and all these things are going to fix me and I'll be okay. Those things, it looked like it was working, and the sponsor I was working with at the time, you know, she kept pestering me about this fourth step, and I'm like, lady, look. You know, I mean, I'm in a relationship and you're not listening to me. You know, I would call her about these relationship issues and work, and she's like, well, where are you at on your fourth step? And I'm thinking, have you not heard a single thing I've said? And you know, I would tell her stories about, you know, how I went through someone's stuff and I found some stuff that I really like, and, you know, I was a good girl and I put it down and I left. And she would say things like, "What are you doing going through other people's stuff?" And I'm like, "Have you not heard? Did you not hear how I handled it?" You know what I mean? Like, what is the matter with you? And you know, she would hurt my little sensitive alcoholic feelings. So she had to go. And I found a sponsor that told me things like, "Take care of yourself." And you're right. Don't go to that meeting. You know, just take care of yourself. And I love that up until the point where I was starting to be suicidal. And I don't say that jokingly or lightly. I say that with sincerity. I was to the point where I was like, if this is sober, I'd rather die. And in fact, I remember I was on a medication at the time, and I remember laying in the bed going, "I wonder if I have enough in there to do the job." And like, that was scaring me, because that's not a thought. I don't remember even drinking. You know, I can't point to a time in my life drinking where I was like, "Oh my God, I'd rather not be alive." And it's because at that time drinking was working. You know, that it is my solution. Or it was. And that terrified me. And a good friend of mine, and he says he doesn't care if I break his anonymity when I speak, Jerry Sinatra, I saw him at a meeting one night. And, you know, the people that I was in treatment with, they're doing better. And I don't understand why I'm still crazy and I have all this drama and I'm just miserable. And it's because they had worked the steps, you know, and I went to meetings and I heard people talk about that. Get a home group, get a sponsor, use that sponsor, work the steps. And yeah, just completely missed that one. But I saw him at a meeting and I was in tears, or almost in tears. I was like, "I don't know what it is that y'all have, but I want it." You know, like, I'm dying on the inside, because for that year and a half I was, you know, "AA Katie, let me tell you a joke. Let me get you looking out here so that you don't see what's going on inside and that I'm dying." Because honestly, I was embarrassed that for a year and a half I sat in these rooms and, you know, I was half measuring it. You know, I wasn't willing to work steps, and I wasn't willing for whatever reason. And so Jerry, he told me, he was like, "All right, you know, let me talk to this woman that I know, and I'll get back to you tomorrow." And that woman ended up being my sponsor that I still have now, Kathy. And you know, when the first time I talked to that woman, I bet she had been like, she probably had a resentment against Jerry, because I just dry drunk vomited all over her. I'm like, oh my God, and my job, and this, and this, and this relationship, and it was just like, I don't even know if I said, "Hey," it just, as soon as I got on the phone with her, it all came out. And God, man, I mean, for the first 6 months, I mean, and she would say things that I didn't understand either. When I would call her about the relationship, she's like, "You need to call two other people and not talk about yourself and ask them how they're doing." And I'm like, this is not solving the problem, lady. But, you know, in the meantime, she got me to join a home group. It wasn't the Fifth Tradition group at the time, but, you know, she was like, "You need to get a home group and you need to get a service position in that home group. And you need to call me every day, and we're going to meet once a week, and we're going to go through the book. And when the book says to pray, we're going to pray. When it says write, we're going to write. And when it says go out to repair the damage, that's what you're going to do. And when it says to help others, that's what you're going to do." And, you know, I love that woman. you know, and we went through the steps. And, you know, I'd started an inventory with other sponsors. And, you know, I could not wait to get, I was like, oh, because when I started writing inventory, I felt like I was actually doing something. You know, I was actually doing something. You know, getting on our knees, saying the third step prayer with another woman, that was awkward. You know, I was just like, oh, and the wording of the third step, but I didn't care. I was so in here in a prison. I've never been to prison, but I've been in one in my head. I don't want to say this is worse than that, because I don't know, but it's pretty bad. You know, and I started writing inventory, and I got to see a lot of things that, you know, I heard someone say once, the only people afraid of writing a fourth step are people that haven't done it. You know, because, I mean, it was absolutely, I mean, I didn't feel great doing it, but I don't feel great doing a whole lot of things, you know what I mean? Like, I don't feel great when I wake up at 5:30 in the morning. You know, my boss doesn't care. She's never once asked me, how do you feel about waking up at 5:30 in the morning? I'll take it to the board and we'll discuss it. No, nobody cares. And, you know, when we did the inventory, y'all, like, I was so delusional. Like, I didn't know that like, I would write down that, you know, in the fourth column, like, where was I at fault, that I was that girl that always, I would say, I'm going to do blank, 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 and not do it. And she's like, that's called lack of integrity. You're a liar. And I'm like, oh. And I would try to use words like people-pleasing. And she's like, really? People-pleasing? She was like, you have no backbone, and you're so afraid to tell people the truth. But if you want to call it people-pleasing, you go right on ahead. You know, she's not, what I love about the sponsor that I have now is that she cares more about my life than my feelings. Because I've had the other, and that doesn't work for me. And, you know, when I did my fifth step, like, God, it was so, I mean, I didn't walk on, I didn't levitate 3 feet off the ground, but it was a little more relief, just a little bit more relief. With each step, I've had a little bit more relief. And, you know, 6 and 7 had no, I'm like, okay, fine. I said a prayer and we read through the 12 and 12. That's what I get to look at a lot now. Because the defects, man, whew, they pop up, daily. Yeah, that the 6 and 7, step 6 and 7 mean more to me now than they did then. But amends, just a couple of really cool amends that I got to make. I have an uncle and aunt. I have a relatively small immediate family, just one uncle, one aunt. And these people were incredible to me growing up. Now, if you'd asked me at the time, I would tell you that, you know, God, I mean, they rode my back, man, you know, talking about school and doing well and be home at curfew. And at, like, 17, I'm like, I'm out of here. These rules are ridiculous, you know. Never mind, I live in my own little place with my sister. Everything is provided. It's these, you know, like, two rules that I'm like, God, this is just too much. But they did, you know, they were incredible people to me and my sister. And the way that I would repay them is, you know, bring illegal stuff onto their property and just outright disrespectful. And, you know, I didn't speak to them for, God, about 5 years or so. And that was that's a whole nother story. But, like, a lot of resentment, like, tore my family apart, a lot of resentment. And I went to them to make amends, and it was the most, I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified, as I am with a lot of things that I do, you know, because I'm a scared person. I'm really a coward, but I know that I can walk through fear today. But, you know, and that uncle, he passed away, actually. Christmas Day will be a year. But the next couple of years after I made amends, it was interesting, and I do not take credit for this at all, because anything good in my life, trust me, is because of a God that I don't understand, but that absolutely is very much alive and working in my life. But the past couple of years, you know, my family was actually somewhat reunited, you know, like hanging out, watching football games, and just being the family that I remember, you know, we were at some of the best times in my life. And, I mean, it's great. Like, I go up there and I get to visit with them, and, I mean, it's all water under the bridge. You know, I love the part in the book where it talks about in the third step that God is our employer. You know, my job is to do God's work, you know, get busy with his kids, and he'll take care of me. And with God being my employer, I decided to promote myself to crisis prevention team in my life. And what that looks like is I try to find areas in my life that potentially may fall apart and start proactively working on them. And, that causes a lot of damage. I don't know how you guys operate under fear and managing, but I do a bang-up job. And that's why it's really important for me, even today, to still have a sponsor, you know, and run things by her and you know, stay connected, and especially with the women that I work with. You know, I touched a little bit on the ninth step amends. 10 and 11, I'll tell you one cool story, because I think I have some time, about 10 and 11. The kind of girl that I am is I want to be right girl. I want to be right and happy, but I'll take being right. And I have an older sister who, in the throes of her addiction, you know, the big book talks about working with others. And I don't think it's just... And that can be applied to every area of my life, not just the alcoholic. But my sister is an alcoholic. She's, you know, in the program too. And I did absolutely everything opposite of what the book talks about. I mean, I used frothy emotional appeal. I gave her money. I cussed her out. I went and told the whole family. I mean, I just did, you know, because I'm going to get you sober, by God. And, I went to visit my grandfather who, you know, he's done absolutely everything in his power to help, you know, me and my sister through everything. And so I went to spend time with him and, you know, as we do, you know, hey, I'm going to be there and not show up. And, I never got to see my sister for the 5 days that I was there and I was pissed. And the kind of girl that I am is that when I'm angry and I'm right, I'm vengeful. I'm not proud of that. I'm just trying to be transparent. Like, but I woke up that morning and I read 86 through 88 and I prayed and I was just like, God help me, you know, said my prayers. I can't remember specifically what I said. And, you know, I was coming back to Atlanta. I had a commitment to help a friend move and I was coming to, you know, now I do what I say I'm going to do except for get back to Tim on when I'm going to speak. But I went downstairs and my grandfather was like, what are we going to do? And I was like, we're not going to do anything because I'm pissed. Never mind, I've just prayed like 2 seconds ago, but I'm like, we're not going to do anything. And he goes, Bug, we got to do something. And for just a split second, it was more to me to do something than to be right. And long story short, through a chain of events, I found my sister that day. I didn't. That's a lie. The manager of the apartment complex found her passed out in her bathroom, like, doorway. And, I mean, she looked awful. Like I said, my sister's a beautiful, beautiful girl. And when I saw her, I was just like, I was like, who is this? I mean, living in filth. That I'm like, what is going on here? And, you know, I ended up able to get her to a, not by myself, like with my sponsor's help and the help of other people. Like, I mean, there's like 10 people on this case. And, you know, she's sober now. You know, she's got like almost 3 years sober. And, you know, that's a relationship that I mean, we were the kind of girls that would cuss each other out, punch each other in insecurities and in the face. And in 5.5 years, I mean, I haven't punched her in the face. I mean, we do still argue. We know how to just get under each other's skin. But, like, today, that's not a constant thing anymore. You know what I mean? Like, that used to be constant. And I do want to talk a little bit about 12-step work. You know, I get the privilege to work with other women, and I'm extremely... If anyone out there doesn't have a sponsor, let me tell you something. My girls help me way more than I help them. Maybe I do help them. I don't know. But there's something awesome about seeing a woman just, like, broken down and go through this process and just the people that they become. You know what I mean? I don't know, man. Like, I have one sponsee that's like, I mean, she was in tears because she got accepted to college. She's like, I'm going to college. You know, I get to see God working in their life. And because I'm so selfish and self-centered and childish, I don't always see God working in my life. But seeing it in their life, I'm like, that just reaffirms to me that, okay, like, God is still very much alive and working. You know, what I'm like now, I like to think that I'm a lot better. I'm by no means perfect. Although I did tell a sponsor one time, not the one that I have now, because there's no way she'd believe it. But I did tell a sponsor at one point, I was like, you know, I know I'm not perfect, but I'm about as close to it as you can get. And I meant it. I meant that with every fiber of my being. And I'm not perfect today. I still get delusional that outside things are going to fix me. Not the most recent, but I had this idea that, God, if I just get back into nursing school, then I'll be okay. I got into nursing school. I'm like, okay, wait, that will. Okay, now I got to pass nursing school, and then I'll be okay, and I passed. And, you know, I remember when I graduated nursing school, they gave me an award. And the award, I should have been, like, just elated and on top of the world. But for a moment, once the graduation was over, I was just disappointed because I'm like, once again, I thought this would fix me, and it didn't. I still do that today with people, with my job. And, this is a spiritual deal. And, the way that I try to do the best I can with, you know, waking up and getting my day started off with God, and reaching out to other people, or at the very least answering my phone when it rings, and taking other women through the steps. I mean, that's, you know, it's not something that I don't get to graduate AA. Trust me, if there was a graduation, I mean, I would be a 4.0. I would, you know, get it done. And but that's just not the case. Every day is, you know, I get a daily reprieve. And, I just try to do this thing on a very, very daily basis, sometimes moment by moment basis. In my relationship today, I'm actually engaged, which blows my mind. I'm like, oh, God, if you ever want to know if your defects are still there, just get in a relationship, because mine just flare up. And I've really got to look at step 6 and 7 with that, you know, just these old ideas that I have about relationships and you know, what that's supposed to look like, and allowing my fiance the freedom to be who and what she is, and not fix me and not make, you know, me okay, because that's not her job. And I will do that to her and expect that of her. And again, that's why I have a sponsor to remind me that that's God's job, you know. And at work, man, you know, I've only been there 6 months, but the latest that I've been is 5 minutes early, and that just blows my mind. But give me about another year and a half, and that might change. But, you know, like I said, I try to do this to the best of my ability one day at a time. And, you know, my life is far, far, far better than, you know, I'd ever imagined. I didn't think that, you know, I'd be engaged with two stepkids that I love, man. You know, I got their pictures on my locker at work, and it's always fun explaining to other people, you know, like, who are these kids? And they're my stepkids. Oh, well, their dad. Well, no, their mom. And you see the head turn, and then, it's like, did the hair not give it away? I may have to go a little shorter. But, you know, I do absolutely today. The coolest thing that AA has given me, you know, it gave me the promise that I would not have the obsession to drink. Have I had thoughts of drinking? Absolutely. But what's cool is what comes after that thought is, yeah, but I don't want to drink. I don't want to. I don't have the desire. And I don't wake up in the morning going, oh, my God, what'd I do? What'd I spend? Who'd I talk to? What'd I say? And that hamster wheel. I do not wake up like that anymore. You know, and that's the promise that I was told, is that, you know, the obsession to drink will be relieved. And that has absolutely happened. And I've gotten way overpaid. Like I said, I have a career that I love. And I have a fiance that I love. And I have friends that I just freaking adore. And, thank you all for having me.
Thank you, Katie. That was awesome. Tim has asked Brian Bostanova to come and give out the chips.
Yeah, come around. Let's raise that microphone for
you. That's special.
All right. You're first coming into AA, or you are coming back to AA and to try our way of life for the first time, or again, we offer the white chip.
Hey, hey.